Welcome to the Bonfire Podcast. I am your host, Morgan, aka Bon Diesel, and this week we'll be talking about Xbox shutting down 4 studios and just a lot more about that. PlayStation is still tripping over themselves. Hades 2 and Animal Well are awesome, and much more. Before we get started, please subscribe to the Bon Diesel YouTube channel. Hit the like button and leave a thoughtful comment. Or, if you prefer, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform and maybe even leave a review on Spotify or iTunes. Thank you to everyone who supports all of my content as YouTube members, Twitch subscribers, and Patreon patrons. If you are interested in supporting this podcast, my other content and such, and getting some bonuses for doing so, check out the link in the description of the show. Oh, this week, it was a long one. If you're just a fan of just gaming in general, what's really interesting about everything we're going to talk about today, especially the Xbox stuff, but even the ongoing PlayStation thing, which is, I'm sure to PlayStation's delight, getting kind of covered up. It's interesting as people, I assume if you're listening to this, this includes you. It definitely includes me. But people who are kind of like always online with this stuff, people who are always kind of paying attention to things that are going on and stuff like that, we have such a different perception of what's happening in the gaming world because it's technically like quote unquote more informed than your dude who works 60 hours a week and has kids and a wife and just, you know, takes a couple hours a week to himself to play games. He bought his Xbox or his PlayStation a couple years ago. He's still trying to get through like Elden Ring or something. Those people, I think, represent probably the majority of players or consumers, customers, and they just don't care. They don't care about the layoffs. They don't care about the studio shutdowns unless it's a studio that they liked because they made a game they liked. They don't know, and they don't care. They have bigger things going on in their life. And when these conversations that have been going on for years, but especially the last few months and especially this last week, are so interesting because we have such a first world attention span, right? I saw multiple references this week to this thing that's going on with Xbox, which we're going to talk about, obviously. That this is like the worst thing that a publisher has ever done, and it just isn't. And when, you know, and so all the publishers in the last 6 months who have reorganized, shut down studios, laid people off, are all just like, oh, you guys forgot about us already. Okay, hey, don't let us bother you there. We will let you think that this is the worst thing any publisher's ever done because you have obviously forgotten the things that we just did, right? And it makes it really frustrating. I kind of expressed on Twitter that I have a lot of frustration with, you know, I've been making content for a long time. I think I've improved all of this stuff I do a lot. And I'm still basically a nobody, which in most ways is fine. When I see the things that people go through who are more influential and known and heard, that looks like kind of a nightmare. So to have my couple hundred people who pay attention every week, honestly, that's fine. I don't actually want more than that. But I do wish when we are in the situation that we're in right now, where like I'm extremely unsatisfied with where gaming media and journalism is at this point, because, and this is the last thing I'll talk about before we get into the actual topics, but it kind of dawned on me that, you know, it's been so weird for me to notice the complete fixation that the, you know, the popular gaming media has with like certain platforms. And, you know, when two platforms do similar things, one gets way more ire and way more doomer takes and way more negativity and much longer lasting negativity around the same moves. And it kind of made me realize that, you know, you look at gaming media and, you know, it's easy to forget as well that, you know, gaming podcasts and journalism, you know, review websites and stuff have been dropping like flies. People getting laid off of their various, you know, jobs, you know, being writers and reviewers and so on for various outlets. You know, they're in their own crisis, right? And what's a shame is that it seems like the answer to that crisis has been for them to go full clickbait, full sensationalism, borderline dishonesty, hyper bias, and that's changing the narrative. Maybe not as much as it appears. One of the biggest issues, and I suffer from this too, is taking Twitter or Reddit or YouTube too seriously and generalizing it too much. All of those places are designed to get clicks. All of those places are designed, you know, to get attention. And unfortunately, well-researched, nuanced, you know, reasonable takes on things don't pay the bills. They don't get clicks, right? And so it's an interesting time. So as I wrap up my little ad lib part here, we can jump into the news, and I will do my best to be better than the things I've been talking about. So let's talk about gaming news. First, we have Xbox, and this is probably the bulk of the show. So we found out this week that Tango Gameworks, Arcane Austin, and two other studios are being shuttered. Specifically, one of the two other studios, one, I think they're both support studios. One's being rolled into ZeniMax, the other one's being taken down. Let's talk about Tango and Arcane. So Tango Gameworks, if you don't remember, just put out Hi-Fi Rush almost exactly a year ago, and has been kind of a darling under the Xbox umbrella because of that. They had games before. I think it's what Evil Within and some other the Ghostwire Tokyo that came out fairly recently as well, and this one has been, the reaction to it has been interesting because it's the one that I understand why people seem so befuddled over it being closed. Because Hi-Fi Rush 2 is amazing. Admittedly, I've never played any of their other games. Their horror game, I'm just not into that genre. And what's interesting is that I think what we've noticed the most is that this is such a clear distinction or such a clear line between people who kind of try to understand the actual workings behind this stuff and the people who just say they just had good game, can't shut down. And like, that's probably how it should be. Like, don't get me wrong. And the thing I try to talk about a lot with all of the content I make is I do look at these things in two perspectives. One, I try to look at it from the business point of view, the analytical point of view, the informed point of view, the calm and cool and collected point of view. And then I also look at this thing as a fan. So when I see Tango Gameworks get shut down as a fan, it is befuddling. It's like, what? Like, I was kind of wondering when Hi-Fi Rush 2 would come out, and that's not going to happen anymore, right? But when I look at it from the other perspective, a lot of things come more into line. Now, here's my disclaimer for the rest of this podcast. I will never cheer on or try to excuse or justify layoffs, closures of studios, personally. But when I talk about this stuff, I think it is necessary because so few people are doing it to try to make some sense of it. Because we'll get more into this. There's this sentiment that, like with Tango, that them getting shut down is the result of like Phil Spencer sitting behind his big oak desk in his big giant corner office, twirling his mustache and saying, "Yeah, you know what I should do today? I should shut down that studio. No good reason, just because." And it's kind of depressing how many takes, even from like relatively well-known like influencers, content creators, journalists even, who have really just go to this lazy, just like, "This is unbelievable. There's no reason for this." And like, that's just not true. We may not like the reasons behind these things, but that doesn't mean there are none. And it doesn't mean that they like aren't justified in their own purpose, in their own, you know, situation as a corporation. And again, corporations are, you know, greedy, ruthless money monsters, and they're not there to be your friends. And the whole console war thing is so lame because it's people being fans of corporations and fighting over it and being like, "My corporation's good and yours is bad," even though they all suck, right? So when it comes to Tango, the factors to consider are a few. Hi-Fi Rush was really good, but all indications are it didn't sell very well. There's probably lots of reasons for that. A big one of them being the weird marketing thing they did. We'll talk about Redfall as well. But I still hold to this day that had Hi-Fi Rush gotten Redfall's marketing campaign, giant hit. Like legitimately, probably would have been a huge hit for Xbox. And then if Redfall would have gotten shadow dropped the way that Hi-Fi Rush did, people probably would have been like, "Why'd they shadow drop this? Oh, that's why they shadow dropped this. That's not very good. Xbox should do better," and moved on, instead of being this complete crap show that Redfall was. I'm not in the boardroom. I'm not the one making the decisions, but yeah. So Hi-Fi Rush, critically acclaimed, kind of a dud when it comes to sales. One thing to consider for that as well is that, you know, recently PlayStation 5 got Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Grounded, and Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves and Grounded Sea of Thieves, I think, was the best-selling game on PlayStation, and I think Grounded was in the top 10. We didn't hear a single word about Pentiment or Hi-Fi Rush. My assumption is neither of them sold very well. Probably bad. They probably sold bad. Hi-Fi Rush may have done okay because it is so highly talked about, but it seems like it probably didn't even sell that well on Xbox where it was, right? So we have that factor. Their founder, Mikami, left after the game came out. Now, it seems like he wasn't really in a direct creative role for quite a while, but he founded the studio. He's the creator of Resident Evil. This was news to me after he left. He was the original creator at Capcom, I guess, of Resident Evil. And so he has this like pedigree of horror, and that's why they did like the Evil Within games or whatever they're called, and even Ghostwire, right? And he leaves because that's what they do. If you don't know, and I don't know exactly why he left, but my assumption is when ZeniMax got acquired, he was the head of his studio, which was under Bethesda ZeniMax. What I believe typically happens is those people get stocks and shares and things like that, but they don't vest immediately. So if your company gets sucked up into an acquisition, you can't just the next day be like, "Okay, see ya, I'm taking my millions of stocks and all that." Typically they have to vest. You have to hold on to them for a couple years. And then it's pretty common for the studios, you know, to get gutted, especially at the very top, by people, you know, like Mikami, who went off and started a new studio to try to help younger devs get into the industry, right? Which is awesome. But if you think about it, what is Hi-Fi Rush without him? What is Tango Gameworks without him? Even if he wasn't in a leadership position or a creative position for Hi-Fi, it's still his name. Like, he's still carrying the reputation of that studio. And when he leaves, even if he believes in the people he's leaving in power positions and in leadership positions, it doesn't mean Xbox does. And you know, it doesn't mean that ZeniMax or Bethesda, you know, felt the same way, right? And it's gross. It sucks. Like that's not how it should be. That there was, and I'll talk more about this in a little bit, but Sarah Bond did a live Bloomberg live interview the day after this all happened, or 2 days, which was a really bad decision. She did not handle it very well, and I don't blame her. You know, she was dancing because she was trying to say the right things, and it came off wrong. But there's this kind of famous clip now out there of her talking for like 2 minutes after being asked why Tango was shut down after how good Hi-Fi was, and she kind of dances around, doesn't really answer it. But I think she did answer it. She was just trying to be nice and basically just said that they didn't hit metrics that they needed to hit to be sustainable. And then you have to think about the context, right? You know, the game they had before Hi-Fi was Ghostwire Tokyo. It was one of those weird games that was still in development when Bethesda ZeniMax got acquired by Xbox and was a PlayStation exclusive. So even though it was an Xbox studio, the game released initially on PlayStation and didn't review very well. There's definitely people who like it, but it reviewed kind of badly. And so I assume it didn't sell that great. And it eventually did come, I think, to Game Pass and all that, but it never made any waves, right? So it was kind of a letdown. All their games before that were pretty old. I'm sure they were fine, but they're probably pretty niche because they're horror. And then we move on to some reporting of the current situation for them after Hi-Fi Rush, in that they were working on a Ghostwire Tokyo 2, a sequel for a game that didn't do very well in the first place, and that they were putting together a pitch for Hi-Fi Rush 2. And a lot of the reporting about that has been like, oh no, they were about to pitch a Hi-Fi Rush 2. But then, like, again, so the fan side of me is like, oh, how could they? Like, you know, Microsoft, I wanted that game because I would have loved that. That would have been great. But then the analytical side of me reads this stuff and reads about how supposedly this Ghostwire Tokyo 2 game was like already multiple years behind in development, which was going to push back any Hi-Fi Rush 2 years and years. And it turned into a situation where they had a studio whose founder left, who supposedly some of the other leadership left. I've not seen names or confirmation of that, so that's just rumor. That's where I'll leave it, right? And, you know, their last two games were generally liked and or even really loved, like Hi-Fi, but didn't make money. And now they're talking about now supporting this studio to make sequels to those two games that will probably not be any more successful financially. Hi-Fi Rush 2 would probably be amazing. Maybe Ghostwire Tokyo 2 would have improved a lot, right? But they're probably, you know, if you look at it from a business perspective, you know, what's the wait? Like, what are you waiting for there? For two more games to probably not make money? And so the human side of me, the gamer of me, wants to see those devs get their shot. And they probably should have, right? But then the more analytical side of me kind of says, like, yeah, I guess I get it. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. I don't justify it. But it doesn't seem so crazy when you think about it like that. Then we move on to Arkane Austin. They released Redfall last year. It was the first exclusive game that they released, I think, since Halo Infinite. And it wasn't just not great. It's just bad. It was really, really bad. It was an awful game. I played it day one, and it was mind-numbingly awful. It looked bad. It played bad. It was a game that just, like, sometimes you play games where maybe the game is like a 6 out of 10, but it's got parts of the game where they're like 7 or 8 out of 10. They're fun. Just the whole package isn't great, right? Redfall was a 6 out of 10, if that, 5 out of 10, and every element of it was 5 out of 10. So it's not like, it wasn't like an average, right? Where like parts of the game are like a 4 out of 10 and some of it's like a 6 out of 10. So it averages out to a 5. No, it's a 5 out of 10 because everything in the game is a 5 out of 10, which is maybe generous. So with Arcane, Austin, not Leon, which is a separate, a sister studio, that's not great, right? So they don't even have the benefit that Hi-Fi had for Tango, where they just put out a great game. Arcane didn't do that. Then we have the situation where, if you look into their development history, the last game that Arcane Austin had that was successful, at least from a review perspective, I don't even know how financially, was 2012's Dishonored that they co-developed with Leon. So it wasn't even an independent project. The game they had most recently was Prey before Redfall. And that's a cult classic. People love and adore that game. And it sold like 1.3 million copies. It didn't make any money. And then they were like a support studio for other games, like Wolfenstein Youngblood, which isn't great either. So then you have another one of these situations where, as a fan, as a gamer, you're like, hey, like, they've done good work on Redfall to get it better. It's still not very good, but they improved it, and they were working on DLC. They were supposedly working on an offline mode, which is never going to come out. So when the servers go down for Redfall, it's gone. And some people were trying to make a big deal out of that, like that was some big tragedy. And from a game preservation perspective, for sure, that sucks for those devs who worked hard. Even if the game isn't great, it sucks that one day their creation will be unplayable. I agree there. But I doubt these people were singing Redfall's praises before that. And it's being upset about that game one day going offline, sooner and later probably, is convenient outrage, is where I would put it. But going back to it, so with Arcane Austin, you're in this situation where, as a gamer, you don't want to see these devs lose their job. You want to see them get another chance to do their thing. You want to see them get a chance to put out all the content they were going to put out for Redfall. You want to see those things happen. You don't want to see them get laid off and the studio get shut down. But then I switch over to my other mode, and I say, like, I mean, yeah. Like, you're talking about a studio again where maybe they were going to pitch Prey 2. Maybe they were going to pitch a new Dishonored game. Maybe they were going to pitch a new IP, which is super risky. But if you look at it from the publisher's perspective, what's that mean? We pay for this team to work for another year on Redfall with pretty much a guaranteed loss. It's not going to come back and make its money back. Then you're going to have them do pitches on a game that they're going to spend the next 4 or 5 years developing and then putting out. And then what's the chances, because they don't have a good recent track record, then what's the chances that that's even worth it? All that money and all that time is worth it, especially if it is 4 or 5 years away, if they can't do something different. Maybe they would have, maybe. But we don't know, and it won't matter because they're gone. And so my issue, really, to a point, has been, as a gamer, this stuff is awful. As, my business side, my business mode, it doesn't seem that crazy. And that has not been the reporting. The reporting has been very, there was a video by SkillUp today that he put out just for the situation. And like, that dude has a clear bias. He always has. And that's fine. That's okay. I've talked about it before that, like, in a lot of ways, Sony has earned a bias from content creators and reviewers and journalists. They've put out a bunch of really good games pretty consistently, and they've made their lives easier, and they've given them good experiences with not too much drama, even though more than you would think. And you can't say that about Microsoft. So I can't even blame, when you see this narrative that seems like it's pretty embedded in the entire games media industry right now about Xbox. From a gamer perspective, you can't blame them. Like, yeah. And even from a business perspective, you can't, because it does great for clicks. Like, they're getting lots of attention for those things. But then, as someone who does like Xbox and thinks that it gets kind of a bad rap, even though it's earned a lot of it, I just think that this is being presented in a way that is lazy and is not very honest. You're not really seeing a lot of these conversations about, like, I hate that this happened. And they're not explaining what happened very well, even though expecting a corporation to explain why they're making moves they're making, especially nasty ones, is silly. Like, I wish they would too, but come on. Like, but, you know, like, no one asked Google to explain why they delete half of the good products they've ever made. Like, that's just what they do because corporations are greedy, evil monsters, and we should operate on that. But gaming's weird, because when I talk about bias and stuff like that, there's this tendency to do the thing where it's like, well, that corporation is evil. That corporation is a greedy monster. But the one I like, nah, man, they're cool. We'll talk about PlayStation. Now, if you're a Nintendo fan, you might actually have something there, even though they have their own stuff. But, like, it's just been interesting. So, like, talking about the media reaction, it just, every single time, and I saw it from highly respected individuals doing the whole, like, this makes no sense. There's no good reason to do this. Yes, there obviously is. Again, I don't think Sarah Bond and Phil Spencer, or really the people making these decisions, the Satya Nadella, I don't know his name, I'm so sorry, the Microsoft CEO, and people probably immediately below him, they aren't sitting around twirling their mustaches, thinking about the most evil crap they can do, right? They're seeing metrics, they're seeing numbers. Unfortunately, they're seeing people as numbers, for sure. And they're making calls. And this is what even Sarah Bond said in this really dumb interview she did. Is that, like, that they are doing these things for the long-term health of the corporation. And I'm not just, like, that sucks. Because the corporation isn't a person. It doesn't have a soul. It's this evil monster, like I've been saying. But it is self-preserving. Like it has a sense of self-preservation. And that's what we're seeing happen. And it's not fun. It's not cool. It's gross. It's not justified. But it's also not, like, completely senseless. And it's just, I'm really bummed that there's been so many people, especially the highest profile folks, in the influencer, in the content creation, in the journalism world, everyone basically but Jason Schreier, who have been just focusing on, like, the emotional reaction of this instead of trying to have some kind of nuance or research or education about it, right? Because you can sit there and you can do a well-researched, well-interviewed, well-sourced story about why these things happened, and then at the end still say, like, yeah, but ew, you know, like, that's okay, and that's not really happening. And if anything, it's just been a big giant dog pile. Like, it's been crazy. It's just been, and to the point where, and what really kills me about this stuff is that you'll see reporting on the layoffs, on the shutdowns, and, like, that's obviously fair, right? And then what always follows, though, are all these, like, nitpicky articles or these speculation articles or these editorials that will, like, one, and it's actually a decent, it's an okay article, but I think it was Ryan McCaffrey did an article for IGN where I said something about trying to save the soul of Xbox. Like, oh, give me a break. Like, stop. Like, come on. Like, it's so dramatic. And it's so over, just, like, dramatized. And it's like, I mean, if that's the angle you want to go on, that's fine. But it's just, I don't know. I just think it sucks. The last thing I'll talk about is that a big conversation that's been going on is how much of this is due to Activision Blizzard King and how much of it is due to Game Pass. And so with Activision Blizzard King, it is likely that to a point, and there's been a few angles on it. One angle has been that before that acquisition, Xbox was just kind of like an expense to Microsoft. And and Xbox makes more money than you think it does. It's actually a pretty profitable, like it has a good profit margin. Even if it, you know, it'd be much higher if they had more consoles sold and so on. But Xbox is a very viable division of Microsoft. It's just not as viable as they probably want it to be, or as some of their competitors are, right? But after they spend $70 billion acquiring ABK and go through the years of legal trouble, which probably cost on its own multiple millions and maybe just more money than I want to think about, it probably brought the eye of Microsoft onto Xbox a lot more. It is, after the acquisition, Microsoft's highest earning division. As much as doom and gloom as there is about it, they're making crap tons of money, right? And unfortunately, that also means now that they're probably the main focus of a bunch of the higher ups at Microsoft, more than their Azure servers, more than their Office products and Windows and all of those things. And probably not more than AI. That seems like their main focus. Seems like everyone's main focus now. But that's probably not been great. And we're probably seeing a lot more intervention or a lot more hands forced due to that, where I don't want to absolve Phil Spencer or Sarah Bond or any of the leadership. You know, at the end of the day, the buck stops with them, right? But I'm willing to bet that things that were being decided 2 or 3 years ago by them are probably not being decided by them today, at least for now. The other factor is Game Pass and how much of this, like, if they didn't have Game Pass, if you know, the games that you had on Xbox, you just paid for them, you know, would the revenue be, would it be a different situation? What would they be able to have kept Tango and all that? When you consider the things I talked about before, I don't think that changes the calculus on those studios, but maybe it does. Maybe my perception of it is wrong, you know, but I have really been doing a lot of thinking about like Game Pass and viability and things like that. And today, like on the Kind of Funny Daily Show, they talked today about how, you know, if they put Call of Duty on Game Pass, they'll probably sell quite a few Game Pass subscriptions for at least a couple months. But they won't make as much money as they would have if they just sold it for $70 to everybody. And if they're going to put it on Game Pass, which we'll talk about, are they willing to take that cut? Because the reason they bought ABK was for King and for Call of Duty, right? You know, Blizzard, everything Blizzard does, like, is probably kind of an afterthought to a point. And all Activision does is Call of Duty. So, like I've gotten to a point where, like, I think if they just came out and said, hey, we tried Game Pass, you know, COVID and lots of other things got in the way from our vision of releasing big new games like every month or two and making Game Pass a viable thing for, you know, up to 100 million people was their goal. And instead, we've stagnated at 30 million subscriptions, which is still pretty good. If you do the numbers, it's still a crap ton of money, especially because by now it's probably not that many people doing free trials at this point. They've gotten rid of a lot of that. But they could come out and just say, like, hey, we tried, it didn't work, so we're going to start transitioning back to just a more typical model. My guess is they would never fully dump Game Pass, that they would switch it to a model, kind of what they have like with EA Play on Game Pass, where like maybe, you know, Fable, Call of Duty, you know, maybe these games, when they come out, they would just, you would just have to buy them for the first like 3-6 months, maybe a year. Maybe it would depend on the game. And so those initial sales, the initial excitement would just be a normal sell model. You just pay for it, you get it, you're good to go. But then for people who are like kind of on the fence or whatever, or they want those third party Game Pass deals that happen, the day one third parties, or even just the third parties of big AAA titles or popular games that came out, you know, you would still have the utility of Game Pass, And it would still have that value in the long run. But maybe you would still give your studios an opportunity to cash in on that release hype, especially with Call of Duty, right? And so I'm really curious to what the future of Game Pass is. And as much as I love Game Pass, and I've gotten 20 years of use out of Game Pass already. Like I've used it to play so many games. I've played multiple games that were my like game of the years, or at least contenders for it. Game Pass has been great. And not really even for the first party games, because there's not been that many of them, right? I don't really even care about that. Like I would just pay for Halo or Senua's Saga or whatever. But all of like Playtale Requiem, Manor Lords, Pal World, like a bunch of these games I've gotten to play as part of that subscription that I probably wouldn't have played otherwise. Amazing. It's been great. So I'm really curious to what the future of Game Pass is. And I think all of this stuff is going to be a pretty big factor. You know, with the upcoming showcase in less than a month, that there's probably a lot of really important meetings happening right now, I would bet. So we'll see. Speaking of that interview Sarah Bond did, so she did an interview a day or a couple days after this stuff happened, and it was with Bloomberg Live, and it was not great. The most, like I said before, the most popular clip that has come out of it was this clip of her being asked, you know, after Hi-Fi Rush had such a good result, why did they cancel Tango? Or why did they shut down Tango Gameworks? And her answer was about 90 seconds of nothing. In her defense, if she needs it, which she doesn't, like I said before, I did decipher an answer. It seemed like she knew that if she was too blunt and just said, like, they didn't make enough money, that was going to bring the ire of people being like, well, it's not about money, it's art, which is true, right? But that isn't going to work in the long run. That's how it should be, right? And so it seemed like there's no way she didn't expect this question. It definitely seemed like she didn't in the way she responded. But surely she was expecting this, but I don't know. Maybe they're all reeling. And yeah, she just kind of rambled for 90 seconds. But what she talked about was how like each project, each game, each studio has their own metrics for success and things like that. And long story short, it's like what I said before, it kind of seems like Hi-Fi Rush just didn't sell very well. And Tango likely didn't have any prospects coming anytime soon that was going to make their studio viable. And then after, you know, they lost Mikami and blah, blah, blah. That's just my interpretation. Maybe I'm wrong. Other things that she did talk about, though, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not Call of Duty is going to be on Game Pass. There's been rumors posted about how even inside of Xbox, there's debate, and inside Microsoft that, like I said before, I'm sure there's Phil Spencer and people who really love Game Pass and are trying to make it work, saying that it has to be on Game Pass, or else, you know, what's the point of Game Pass at that point? And then there's, you know, others probably saying, like, we're gonna lose, they'll lose out on maybe half of the money they would make from Call of Duty if they just sold it normally, right? And her statement during this, and it's been said among in other arenas as well, that every new release for Xbox is going to be on Game Pass. I don't think they've come out and just said, yes, Call of Duty is going to be Game Pass day one. There could be licensing issues. There could be issues with Activision's deals, like with PlayStation. Maybe they had exclusivity deals or parts of their contract that were signed before the acquisition that prevents them from putting Call of Duties on Game Pass for so long. And they would still probably have to honor that, or Xbox would have to buy it out or something. But that's a whole different issue, right? So it's such a strange situation to be in where they need to make money, and the way they've been trying to do it is not by focusing on consoles, not by focusing on, you know, selling games traditionally. It's been by trying to capture the play Xbox on any screen and Game Pass and streaming and PC Game Pass, which for gamers has been great in a lot of ways, right? It's just, you know, we don't know if it's working on their backside, and it kind of seems like maybe it's not with some of the things that are happening. She also talked about an app store that they're going to be doing for Microsoft and Xbox that's going to be giving mobile games that their studios make, that you'll be able to get them straight through Microsoft instead of going through an app store and paying like those fees and stuff for DLC or microtransactions, like through iOS or through Android. What was interesting about this is they aren't going to have an app. It's going to be web-based, and I've seen a lot of people dogging on that, but what that's implying is that you'll be downloading like APKs, like the actual games directly to your phone, and doing a thing called sideloading them, and having which actually is cool, is really neat. I see this going nowhere. It's one of those things that if it got marketed right, it would probably be a pretty cool thing. But we all know at this point that Xbox's strength is not marketing. And speaking of marketing, let's talk about Hellblade 2, which is out in like a week, on the 21st. They're kind of an example of this like kind of lean against Xbox I was talking about, is this story. In one way, though, I don't disagree. There's been a lot of talk lately about Hellblade 2 is coming out in like 2 weeks. And they aren't talking about it at all. Really, since the ABK acquisition, it's just been bad news of layoffs. The rumors about all of their games going multi-platform, and then the confirmation that a few of them were shutting down studios, more rumors about multi-platform, all that. And one way to counteract some of that is to talk about the games you have coming out. And as of 2 weeks before Hellblade 2, they weren't doing that. To update, in the last couple days, they've released some like videos, like documentary style things. I've seen their advertisements for Hellblade 2 on Twitter, Reddit, YouTube, Twitch. They're getting out there now. They have a new background for your Xbox. Like, they are marketing it, and it seems like they're doing it pretty normally. Now, people who were expecting like a Call of Duty style marketing campaign were being kind of dumb. This is a $50 game that's 7 to 8 hours long from like a boutique studio. This isn't Call of Duty. It's not God of War, as much as I wish it was. And maybe this is one of those things where it's like people had a point, but we're maybe exaggerating and sensationalizing a bit. Believe it or not, right? Probably the worst part about the conversation after what happened this week, is now almost every single space where I see people talking about Hellblade 2, you just see multiple people saying like, well, no matter how good or bad this does, you know, what's Ninja Theory's future? You know, like, how secure are they feeling today, right? And it's not a bad point, because something that I didn't even mention yet is talking about how there's so many of these journalists, especially, but all kinds of people, doing this thing of like, Microsoft has trillions of dollars, Xbox makes billions of dollars. You know, why don't the C-suite people, the upper executives, take pay cuts so they can pay these people salaries and not fire them? And I won't pretend like I understand how corporations work, how these things happen, how budgets work and all that. But what I do understand at this point, and I can't believe others, I think other people understand it. They just don't want to, because it makes it harder to sensationalize it. But it's not about money in the sense of like how much money they just made. You know, whether or not Hellblade 2 sells 10 million copies or 1 million copies. It's obvious that, you know, and this isn't just with Xbox, it's with all the platforms. People are forgetting that not very long ago, Sony Santa Monica, Naughty Dog, I think Insomniac, for EA, Respawn, all had layoffs recently, even though those are the premier studios in those publishers' lineups, right? It obviously isn't about whether your game is successful or not. Or if it is, it doesn't mean you're safe, right? And so where so much of this conversation has been about like, oh, is Ninja Theory safe? My response is no one's safe, except maybe Nintendo first parties. They seem pretty good so far. But Xbox, PlayStation, Embracer Group, Ubisoft, EA, you know, none of the freaking Square. Capcom seems okay as well, maybe, as far as we know. Warner Brothers, you know, like, none of those studios are safe, even under Hasbro with that Archetype studio. And then, you know, all those studios they have make like a G.I. Joe game. None of these studios are safe. Like, you would think that, like, I don't know, the big high profile ones are, but like, is 343 safe at Halo? Probably not, or at Xbox. Because you see these conversations come up about Ninja Theory, Double Fine, things like that under Xbox, and it's like, we don't know. But do those studios have things coming soon that make them viable because they have content coming out in a reasonable amount of time? Double Fine released Psychonauts a couple of years ago, the sequel. They are probably working on something right now, probably multiple things they've talked about. We know that Ninja Theory has other experiences coming, probably fairly soon. They've been working on just as long as Hellblade. We don't know the calculus. But my big thing is just that none of these things are safe. The final thing I'll say about Hellblade is that, of course, like clockwork, the rumors about it going to PlayStation 5 started coming out this week after the news. Because, again, something actually bad happens with Xbox or one of the publishers, and then all of the follow-up sensationalized things start to fall in because they're riding that wave of clicks, right? This one's just rumors. Supposedly they're debating whether or not to put Hellblade back over on PlayStation. And I'm of two minds about it. This seems unlikely because the four games they have tested were all Bethesda ZeniMax games. They weren't core Xbox Studio games. Hellblade 2 is a core Xbox Studio game. And it seems the least likely for this to happen. To me, this really does just smell a lot like people doing the whole, like, just say this thing because you know people are going to click on it and spread it either way. I am more open to the idea of, like, eventually doing this. I think once a game no longer shows any ability to sell consoles or subscriptions, and it would only be good to put it on other platforms, that makes sense. Essentially, PlayStation's strategy so far with their games on PC. You know, now they wait 2-3+ years in their calculus. That must make sense for them, because they push hardware very hard. And so, like, even if this was true, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But it definitely can't be one of those things where, like, you know, in a couple months we find out it's going to PlayStation. Like, this should be a thing. But what if that means that Ninja Theory isn't in danger, right? Then you come down to that. I don't know, man. I'm just tired. I'm tired of talking about this stuff, but it's not going anywhere. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of chatter about how the layoffs and all of that are probably still going to be pretty common for another year or two, maybe. So just buckle up is my advice. Moving over to PlayStation, as we're 50 minutes in and I still have a bunch of stories, I'll try to go through them relatively quickly. So we all know that, you know, Helldivers 2, PlayStation, Sony agreed to get rid of the PlayStation Network requirement that everyone was upset about on PC. And so that's great for the people that are still able to buy the game. In an odd move, at this point, they still haven't reactivated the ability for people in 177 countries to play the game. And so when the game first came out, you could essentially buy Helldivers from anywhere and play it. After they reversed their decision about the PSN network thing, or even during it, they banned people from every country that can't get PlayStation Network accounts, which is 177 countries. And obviously you look at that list and there's some countries where it's like, it kind of makes sense. that they probably don't have the infrastructure or whatever. But then there's countries like, and like, you know, like the former Soviet states and stuff like that, like the Baltics, that like have like, that they could do it. And I actually don't know the history or the reasoning behind why so many places can't get PlayStation Network logins. It seems bizarre to me, but they still haven't reversed that. So if you live in Slovenia, this is just an example I'm kind of making up, and you bought Helldivers and played it for a few months, and then they delisted it from your region because you couldn't get a PlayStation Network login, and then you were happy because you saw them reverse that decision, you still can't play because you're still delisted for some reason. And it seemed like maybe it was just taking them time to fix that. But then the Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut PC version got listed, and then it had the same 177 countries blocked from it. A single player game. It has multiplayer elements, and they had even said recently that the multiplayer part would require a PlayStation login, but not single player. But now that doesn't seem like it's true. It seems like to get the game, you have to be able to do the multiplayer login, even if you don't ever plan on doing it. And so now they've, where it seemed like maybe they were just taking their time before with reversing this decision, it actually seems like they've doubled down on it. And what's really, really interesting, and watching this game dev that's like the biggest thing on Twitch right now, this pirate software, people kept trying to get him to talk about Microsoft doing layoffs and stuff. And he's like, hey, corporations, it's what they do. He worked at Blizzard. He's worked in games for a really long time. He's a pretty matter of fact, not hyper emotional dude. And he was like dogging on Microsoft for shutting down these studios. But he also was kind of taking the perspective, I suspect more devs have than you think, of like, yeah, this is what happened. Like, that's what they do. But he was really hyper fixated on this situation with Sony because it's not like normal business. In fact, they're leaving money on the table in a big way. And it seems, in his theory, and I subscribe to it, is that due to, and some reports came out recently about how even PlayStation is starting to see some pretty big declines in hardware sales, and they're in the middle of a gigantic first-party content gap, that there's a decent chance that part of this is just PlayStation trying to pump numbers and try to show like millions of new PlayStation Network users, even though they're just PC players who are being forced to have a login. And I subscribe to it because during these times where things are kind of weird, things aren't going great, in the gaming industry, they probably thought they had like a little fun way to pump some metrics, and it's not working out for them very well. This may be another one of those things where only the forever online people care and the regular folks don't, but they probably do because those regular folks live in those countries that can't play and are probably noticing like, hey, wait, I just played Helldivers for multiple years. I saw something that they reversed that decision. Why can't I play still? Right. I was going to pre-order Ghost of Tsushima and I can't, So yeah, this was a weird thing that they kind of just like lied about, like they apologized, said, we're still learning. And then it seems like they didn't learn anything, but we'll wait and see. And for what it's worth, the rumors are the next game to come to PC is going to be God of War Ragnarok, which has no multiplayer. And will be really interesting to see when it happens, if they're still doing this stuff. It'll be very interesting. For Nintendo, they did confirm officially that sometime during this fiscal year, they're going to announce new hardware. I believe, have already confirmed that the June Direct will not mention new hardware. It's going to be about anything that's coming out on Switch in the last half of this year. So they've kind of squashed any of those speculations already. They also said that their current fiscal year forecast does not include new hardware sales. So that implies that the new hardware isn't coming anytime before March 31st of 2025. This may be related, but they also announced that they've sold 141 million units of Switches. I believe the Wii had like 149 or almost 150 million. And there's a lot of rumors and people thinking that they're pushing back their next hardware just to see if they can break that record, which is hilarious because Nintendo fans don't care. They will just ride it out. If it was Sony or Xbox trying to pull that same stuff, their fans would lose their freaking minds. But Nintendo fans, they don't care. They'll keep playing their outdated cell phone CPU and GPU from 8 years ago. They don't care. Doesn't matter. Yeah, this is interesting. Again, if these rumors that they finalized hardware like 2 or 3 years ago are true, and we're still a year away from them releasing this thing. I mean, most recent rumors are still saying that it's supposed to be somewhere between the power of like a PS4 Pro and a Xbox Series S in the middle there somewhere when it's docked and getting its full power lot. We'll see. I don't know. I think that their hardware is going to be another disaster, and I don't think anyone's going to care. I think that their IP is too strong. Their fandom is too deep. I just don't think it's going to matter. I think they're going to come out with another hyper outdated system that can't make games look any good in any even marginally modern way, and just no one's going to care. And that's great. Good for them. Good for their fans. It's all good. The other bit of Nintendo news was that they are turning off the ability to upload your photos from your Switch directly to Twitter or X. I hate it. And this is the same thing that Xbox and PlayStation did. This is almost certainly due to some changes to Twitter that Elon Musk did, where he made using their API. So the way that like other systems can interact with Twitter systems, hilariously expensive to be a part of and to use. And it just, you know, if you make something so unwieldy and expensive that even these companies that are these multi-billion dollar companies don't want to deal with it, you're probably doing something wrong, but who knows. We did have the EA Q4, I believe, investor report. Some interesting bits out of it were an announcement that an owned IP will be releasing this fiscal year. This was almost certainly a reference to the upcoming Dragon Age Dreadwolf. But they didn't make any specifications, just this fiscal year, which could be almost a year from now. It still sounds like, and I believe even Jeff Grubb and other people have said, like, this still seems like it's 2024. My guess is late summer or like fall-ish, could be winter. I'm hoping as soon as possible because I want those devs to start working on Mass Effect. But I'm also really curious about Dreadwolf. But for these people who have been waiting 10 years more, 10 years plus, for a follow-up to Inquisition, and for everyone kind of waiting with bated breath to see what BioWare is in 2024, I think this is going to be an interesting release. I think it's going to be interesting. Andrew Wilson, the CEO of EA, also made a big statement about how they're encouraging their studios to use AI to increase their efficiency and development speed of all these new games they're working on. And rumors came out, or I guess statements also came out, about how they are considering trying to figure out how to implement ads into their games and gameplay because they think that could be a big revenue driver. So buckle up for that. Hopefully just in their sports games. Good Lord, I don't want to see like a Tide commercial when I take a break from Dragon Age Dreadwolf when I hit pause, right? But we'll have to wait and see. The one thing I will tell people about this AI conversation especially is that that is such a investor, shareholder keyword right now. Every single tech shareholder wants to know that their investment is working on AI because that's what their advisor told them is hot right now. And so there's a really good chance that this is Andrew Wilson saying like, yeah, we're going to do AI. And then him going into meetings with the studios being like, what kind of AI stuff are we using? And they're kind of like, we're not. Or like, we tried it and it's still not working very good. Like it seems like it's just to pump up the shareholders, but maybe not. We'll have to wait and see. There was an article about ARM CPUs coming to PC. So ARM is a different kind of CPU. So like with AMD and Intel, which are the most popular CPU companies right now, they use what's called x86 architecture. And so that is a licensed technology, and it's pretty exclusive. And if you want to get into computing outside of those two companies, it's hard because you can't use x86, but x86 is like the foundation of almost all computers and the current consoles and everything. And so ARM is an alternative, and it sounds like there's rumors that NVIDIA may be trying to get into the CPU space, and because they would never be allowed to make their own x86 processors, it seems like they may be going towards ARM, and that leads to a lot of interesting conversations, because during the ABK acquisition for Xbox, documents got leaked, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, that they were considering using ARM processors and ARM tech for the next Xbox, which with how ARM and NVIDIA are tight right now, sounds like there could be a possibility I would love of a NVIDIA-powered Xbox with DLSS and all of their way more advanced tech than AMD, who both consoles currently use. One of my biggest things is I hope that in the upcoming hardware of the next gen, whatever console hardware is going to look like in the future, that it's not just basically the two of the same consoles with different plastic. Because for all intents and purposes, with a few customizations, the PlayStation 5 and Series X are the same console. They are basically the same. There's some infrastructure differences, and there are some small differences between them, but nothing significant. And that's a huge disadvantage for Xbox. It's because they can't even claim the big like power. I think the Xbox is technically a bit more powerful than the PS5, but it's not shown, at least not so far. So, yeah, this ARM thing is really interesting to me. I also love competition. Anytime that AMD and Intel can get competition, it's probably good as they kind of get comfortable just competing with each other. Yeah, keep an eye out on this. It could be really interesting. I'm concerned NVIDIA is only getting into it, though, for AI stuff, but I hope I'm wrong. Warner Brothers came out and said that they have taken a $200 million loss and basically just blamed Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, Rocksteady's most recent game. I wouldn't be real comfortable as a Rocksteady dev right now. This sucks because, like, whoever greenlit, whoever probably made Rocksteady make a looter shooter game with a franchise that has not been very popular recently, instead of a really cool modern Batman game, I'll never understand. So I hope I'm wrong. This is not, I shouldn't be a doomer just like everyone else and how I don't like that. But yeah, I mean, Rocksteady's in a weird spot, man, because it turns into that conversation I had about Tango and about Arkane, where, you know, maybe they do have a new Batman game in the works. That's their next project, but it's like 6 years away. And when these publishers are doing that calculus right now, that's not a position you want to be in, it seems like. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. That's one of those I hope I'm wrong about. I don't even have any affinity for Rocksteady. I don't know if I've ever played any of their games. But it's just one of those studios that you don't want to see go away. Alan Wake 2 still has not made its money back from development. Remedy does continue to work on Control 2 and the Max Payne remakes. And that's wild, especially, again, it kind of, we come back to this conversation again, that Hi-Fi Rush was an awesome, critically acclaimed game. Alan Wake 2 is an amazing, critically acclaimed game. And it will probably not make its money back. If Remedy was under a publisher, that would probably be pretty bad news for them. Now, maybe not, though, because like I said before, we know they have 2-3 other projects ongoing. They did just cancel a multiplayer game, but they have things coming probably in the next year or two with the Max Payne remakes, more than likely. So it's like one of those things where Remedy, probably is in a better position, even if they were under a publisher. Because, yeah, they had a game come out that was critically acclaimed, didn't sell very well, but they have stuff coming soon that could sell well. Like, they at least have that potential for profit soon, and if you're looking at it from that business perspective, that's probably the difference between them and studios who are shutting down, right? Hades 2 released in early access to gigantic acclaim. The first game never really grabbed me. I'm just not very good at it. It was beautiful, and the writing was fun, and it was, seemed like a really, really, really cool game, and I was complete booty at it. I sucked so bad at Hades. I watched people play this new one, and it's beautiful, and it seems so good, and I just don't think I would enjoy it. I just don't. It doesn't look like a game I would be very good at. And so it's one of those ones I'll probably appreciate from afar. And assuming Game Pass sticks around, maybe one day it'll go on there and I can play it. That'd be great. And then finally, Animal Well, a solo-developed kind of roguelite kind of game, is the first game being published by the YouTube content creator Donkey by his publisher. It has scored a 91 on Metacritic, and the reviews I've seen of it, there's been two or three, have like been falling over themselves for this game. It's got some really cool like visual stuff, like the way the effects and particle effects and stuff work in it are just really, really cool. But it's also this like kind of simple looking game. It's a strange game, but it's super cool, and it seems like one that, you know, to get into. It's another one of those. I don't know how good I would be at it. I may wait and see where it shows up before I would buy it. But, you know, it's a good way to end the podcast with some good news. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to wrap things up. It's a heavy week. A lot of crazy stuff going on. I thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please consider supporting all of my content by watching, listening, sharing, and following my socials. Or you can throw a few bucks my way via one of the ways to support. You can see all of those things in the link in the description of the show. That is all I have for this episode of The Bonfire. So, until next time. We'll be right back.